Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Few updates today. One, a global warming update. In Colorado, we're digging out of a blizzard, and it snowed in Jerusalem. We'll talk about that. And also, the press release we announced on this show yesterday that went out to Howard Dean at the DNC. We sent it all around the country, and it's to remind the Democrats that if they choose Denver as the site of their national convention, watch out. This is the headquarters of the Clinton rapist protest. So I'll tell you a bit more about that. And the United Kingdom has commissioned, the government in England has commissioned a report on the future. And they received a number of papers in, and one is suggesting that within 50 years, robots may have human rights, which is, I mean, these people watch science fiction movies and they take it seriously. So we'll talk about those things and more. Now, to start with this global warming update, in Colorado, we're not yet done digging out from the last blizzard. In fact, the staff here at KGov, just today, people still getting stuck on their way to work from the blizzard. And now meteorologists are telling us that another one is bearing down on Colorado, should start later today. So that's part of our global warming update. And then also in Jerusalem, in Israel, snow continued to sweep across Israel today, causing havoc throughout the country. That's unusual for public school teachers tuning in right now. Israel's in the Middle East. It's a dry, arid, warm climate. Snowstorms in the Golan Heights, the Galilee, and Hebron last night have now pressed on till today, Wednesday, falling in the Negev. You know where the Negev is? That's the south. That's the desert. And reached the central hills of Israel and Jerusalem. So snow has been falling in Jerusalem today. Also in the south, hundreds of Bedouins were injured when several tents collapsed due to the stormy weather, snow and rain. They live in big tents. You know, you go to Israel, you see them. It's a pretty different culture. In America, we had sort of Bedouins, right? Nomads, the American Indians. And there was a clash of cultures because biblically, God urges human beings to mark out their property. Use landmarks to show, okay, this is our land, that's your land. And when people have no land, then what it really means, all those liberals who say that Europeans had no right to take the land from the Indians said they had no land, which meant really that they had all the land. If you say you have no land and you could go and live anywhere you want, that's like saying we have all the land. So you have, what, 30,000 people claiming 300,000 square miles or something. So that's like extreme selfishness. And so it was a clash of two cultures, and the more biblical culture, I'm not saying that the Europeans were godly when they came here, but it is a biblical concept to own private property, and it's far more conducive to a good lifestyle to raise your children when they have a roof over their head and a fireplace to keep them warm in the winter. Much better. Okay. So anyway, Bedouins, hundreds were injured when their tents collapsed. They have big tents over there. And by the way, this is coming out of today's Jerusalem Post, thanks to the internet. And in another incident in the town of Acre, we talked about the town of Acre in a recent Bible study just about 3-4 weeks ago, in the book of Acts. In the town of Acre, a eucalyptus tree fell on an elderly woman. She was then evacuated to a hospital. In Tel Aviv, 10 vehicles were damaged from falling trees. Wow, what a mess, huh? Okay, so that's our global warming update for the week. Then the press release we sent out yesterday, we announced it first on this show, Bob Enyart Live, as the Democratic National Committee decides where to hold their national convention this coming summer. They're between New York City and Denver. They're not sure which. In Colorado, of course, the Democrats view as closer and closer to a Democratic state. So they'd really like to have it in Denver. And we're reminding them that Denver is the headquarters, the world headquarters, of the Clinton rapist protests. So if they come here, we want to let them know that we will be ready to greet them. And boy, we have pulled off some pretty amazing protests from Martha's Vineyard to Auckland, New Zealand. 10 Americans flying to Auckland, New Zealand when Bill Clinton went to that country. And basically, we got the message out on radio, in their newspapers, and on TV throughout New Zealand. The whole country knew we were there. When they spotted us on the street, they knew who we were because we all wore the same outfits. And they knew about our flyers and our signs. We'd get into a taxi cab in Auckland, New Zealand, the capital of the country, and the taxi cab driver would know where we're going. Same thing happened in L.A., of all places. Los Angeles, same thing. When you have an organized protest, same thing in Little Rock, Arkansas. In Little Rock, Arkansas, we'd walk into a fast food restaurant for some lunch. We didn't have our signs, but just our shirts, shadowgov.com, and the cashiers would say, "Hey, could I get one of those yellow flyers that explains the evidence that Clinton is a rapist?" Which say, "Sure," and go get out in the car and go get one. So when we do these protests, pretty much they're organized, they're well thought out, they're well funded, and at least that's what the liberals think. They look like they're well funded, and they work. So if the Democrats are going to come to Colorado, we want to let them know that we'll have a welcoming committee ready for them. So we faxed this press release. It's on our website at KGOV.com. You could look at yesterday's show, December 26th, about the NASCAR interview we did. And right there, just click on that show title, and you'll see the entire press release. And we're encouraging our listeners to email this or fax it to Democratic leaders, local and state Democratic leaders. You could send it to a newspaper also if you were inclined to. And so here at our KGov cabin, the Bob and Yurt Live cabin here in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, buried in snow right now because of global warming, we have faxed it to Clinton's Harlem office, Bill Clinton's, the Clinton Library in Little Rock, to Howard Dean at the DNC. We've sent it to Hillary Clinton's offices in Washington, D.C., and in New York City, and a few others around the state of New York, her regional offices. And we faxed it to the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post. So we're just trying to get the word out so that they know that they will have a welcoming committee from shadowgov.com. And if you've not read the Clinton rapist report from us, you owe it to yourself to read it, because history will remember, largely thanks to the conservatives who have gone out of their way to make it clear that those who support, let's say, Bill and Hillary Clinton, are so hard-hearted and so evil that they will support a man even though there is overwhelming evidence that he is a rapist, and they don't care. That's why we do this. Because some people, it's the last hope for them to realize how evil they are. And we've talked to thousands of people about this issue. We've distributed tens of thousands of flyers laying out the evidence. We've talked to people and explained, your heart is so hard, you are so cold, you are so hateful against God and what is right, that your hero, even if he is a rapist, you don't care. Because you hate the alternative so much. So that's one reason, so that history will have a footnote that the hero of the liberals through the latter part of the 20th century was a rapist. Okay. What else? The UK, this is too funny. The United Kingdom, for public school teachers, also referred to as England, commissioned a report on the future in technology, and they got a number of papers submitted, And one was submitted by a management company and an opinion research organization. They co-wrote a paper covering the rights of robots. And they're saying that this is, it should be just make-believe, right? But this is real. This comes from the Financial Times, FT.com, a UK publication, respected publication. They're saying that by the year 2056, robots may have rights. They may require rights. And those rights would include, for example, the right to housing, the right to be repaired if they're damaged, the right to food and health care. Well, not food, electricity, I guess, or charged batteries, whatever. And they're saying that robots, by 2056, robots may be sentient by then. Public school teachers listening right now, sentient, in other words, self-awareness, consciousness. Now, that's just too funny, right? Of all the technology, of everything we've done, of all the advances in computer science and the extraordinary computers, we love technology here. I worked for Microsoft and wrote for PC Week for a few years and worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache helicopter. Hey, by the way, the Army just put in an order. The news is just out today for another 125 Apaches, attack helicopters. That's pretty cool. Only now Boeing is making these. Boeing. Same helicopter. Okay. So anyway, with all this advance, it's not like computers are starting to become self-aware, right? Your computer is not self-aware. No gizmo we've ever made has any inclination that we made it. They don't know they exist. They don't know if you like them or if you don't like them. If you create a computer system, let's say a visual system, an artificial intelligence system, to identify bald-headed men, and it does a pretty good job of it. It's installed at the airport. Let's say you're looking for a bad guy who's totally bald. And so you got a system, and boy, it's really good. It identifies every bald-headed guy. It does a great job. It has no idea it's identifying bald-headed guys. It doesn't know what a bald head is. It doesn't know what a head is. It doesn't know what a guy is. It doesn't know what it is. It doesn't know it's doing anything. It doesn't know anything. It's made of atoms and molecules. And to be sentient, to be self-aware, that's knowledge. And knowledge is not physical. Awareness is not physical. Atheists say, oh, the only thing that exists, only material things exist. Only physical things exist. The laws of logic are not physical. What else is not physical? Grammar is not physical. Right? Grammar is not physical. Pain, of course. Pain is not physical. Pain is awareness that something's wrong. It's so funny to watch an atheist try to argue a strictly material existence. And an atheist is using language, knowledge, and logic to try to argue a strictly material existence when none of those things are material. It is just hysterical. But they are scared to death to acknowledge the validity of anything other than the material universe. They're scared to death of it. So how is it that they argue that there are only atoms and molecules, that there's only the physical universe, that we have only a material existence? How do they argue that? Well, they try to use logic. So you ask them, are the laws of logic physical? Are they made out of atoms and molecules? At what temperature do the laws of logic boil? Do they melt? Are they a liquid or a solid or a gas? What? What are they? How do you accelerate the laws of logic? So, anyway, of course, the laws of logic are not physical, and grammar is not physical. Language is not physical. Right? The fact that the noun should agree with the verb in number, Is that physical? That's not physical. It's just hysterical. And the adjective should agree with the noun in gender. Is that physical? It's not physical. So public school teachers, ignore what I just said, those examples. It's okay that you don't understand them. You hear an atheist argue that there is only the physical universe. We have a strictly material existence, and they can't even begin to make the argument without using strictly non-physical tools. It is really funny. Okay. Now, National Geographic, they must be beside themselves over there because they published an article this month, December 2006, on an entire world of microorganisms trapped inside of a single drop of amber. And you know what's really funny about all this? Evolutionists say that big organisms, like people, we're relatively large compared to a million other species on Earth. Big organisms evolve very slowly. Little organisms, tiny ones, they evolve much more rapidly. You've heard that, right? So it turns out that in this single drop of amber, they have preserved for us to study bacteria, fungi, fungus, plural of fungus, algae, microscopic animals that are known as protozoans, and that these things are supposedly 220 million years old. And you know what they say? They say this is when the dinosaurs first began to appear, and here are all these microorganisms. And surprisingly, according to National Geographic, surprisingly, these microscopic organisms look quite familiar to today's scientists. These microbes have undergone few or no physical changes since the Triassic period from 245 to 208 million years ago. So isn't that funny? They tell us that tiny organisms evolved the most rapidly, yet here we have a whole world, they're calling it a micro world, of 220 million year old life. And it's identical to bacteria today and algae today and protozoans today. Now, this article doesn't mention any viruses, but let me tell you about, supposedly the virus is ancient and started way back, like a billion years ago. And when the different families of viruses appeared, they're tiny compared to bacteria and really tiny compared to organisms like humans. A virus is tiny and they have 5 to 10 genes and they can't live on their own. They need a symbiotic relationship with a cell. They go into a cell. They slip into a cell. They're so tiny. They get through the cell wall and they co-opt the machinery of the cell to reproduce copies of the virus. So that's pretty interesting. And the virus has, a typical virus has 5 to 10 genes. And so what's funny is today, after a billion years of evolution, a virus still has 5 to 10 genes. That's about it. And you know how evolutionists say that viruses are so quick to evolve? They evolve so quickly. That's one of their main arguments. Well, scientists know pretty well that as mutations accumulate in a virus, the virus becomes less and less efficient and has a harder and harder time of functioning. Unlike the DNA in a human cell, our genes, when they reproduce, there is this wildly complex quality control system to make sure they reproduce accurately. That's not true for a virus. A virus that reproduces and you get whatever you get. And so they do tend to mutate quickly. So if they're mutating quickly, why aren't there large, complex viruses? Why are they just 5 to 10 proteins? That's it. And why don't they even evolve new virus families. Why not? So anyway, bad news for National Geographic and all the atheists who are hoping to prove that human beings have evolved from slime. Turns out they can't even prove that slime evolved from slime. They can't even prove that slime evolved from slime. Now, I have a post from theologyonline.com. What a post this is. This is from a former homosexual to another homosexual on TOL. That's our sister website, a ministry of Denver Bible Church, theologyonline.com. And so I want to read this to you. This is a post from just this past week, and it is powerful. It's from a guy whose name on TOL is Love Me or Hate Me. You know, most people have usernames they make up. This guy's name is Love Me or Hate Me. And he's writing to a homosexual named Adam. And so here goes. Adam, let me tell you a little about myself. In doing so, I hope it will help you understand where I am coming from. This is in a forum about homosexual marriage and whether or not that should be allowed. When I was 14, I, quote, came out as a gay person. I did this after being brought up in a home that was condemning of homosexuality because of my parents' Christian beliefs. I thought, and I told them, that their beliefs were wrong. I was very in your face and kept trying to persuade my parents that I was right and they were wrong. At one point, my dad called me a shame to the family, and that made me very angry and upset. I couldn't understand why my parents would not accept this homosexuality. I did my best to try and show them that homosexuality is the equivalent to heterosexuality. I did not want to know God, even though I attended church. During this time, I even got the help of a homosexual youth group and other groups. And I read books on the issue of homosexuality and the Bible. And I even met the writer of one of these books. I was researching homosexuality in the Bible, not because I wanted to reinterpret the Bible for myself, as I wasn't a believer, but because I wanted Christians, such as my parents, to accept me as I was, and it just wasn't happening. During this time, I myself had multiple partners and convinced myself that I was just seeking love, wanting a long-term relationship with another man. When I was 16, this was when I first thought about the concept of knowing God and having a personal relationship with Him. However, I decided that I did not want to be in the church as it condemned homosexuality. And I bought the big lie that homosexuality is a behavior which one is born with and one cannot change. So I decided to go to the Metropolitan Community Church. We've talked about that church over the years here on Bob and Yurt Live. That's the church where many are cold and a few are frozen. Remember that church? And in so many Metropolitan Community Church congregations around the country, the vast majority of their members are dead, literally. It was a new church, and most of their members were dead because they're killing one another with their homosexual destructive lifestyle. At any rate, Love Me or Hate Me says, I decided to go to the Metropolitan Community Church and sure found a whole load of, quote, Christians prepared to affirm my lifestyle choice. They agreed with me when I complained about other churches that condemned homosexuality. You know what, though? While I was going to this church, I joined TOL. That's theologyonline.com. I started posting on this site about how homosexuality should be accepted. And I even posted some of the exact same stuff on here from the MCC website that you have posted in this very thread. When I did so, all I seemed to get back was condemnation and hate. I thought, this isn't right. A Christian can't hate. At the same time, I was starting to feel uncomfortable in my own church, MCC. I don't know whether this was because of the prayers of TOL members, my family, or both. However, I started seeing that these people in MCC were more interested in sleeping around than in being a church. These people were homosexual first and Christian second. Something in me told me, this isn't right, get out of here. So I did. That something in me, that would be called our conscience. That's also not physical. I started attending Hillsong Church in London, a right-wing fundamentalist evangelical church. Certainly not a church that I would have chosen at that point. I was there for a few months, not exactly sure what to do with my life. And then, around last October, I was talking with Knight. Knight is one of the men from Denver Bible Church, and he is the webmaster, the founder of TOL, Theology Online. I was talking with Knight on one of the TOL threads, and I gave my life to the Lord. Just like that. I entered into a personal relationship with him. I haven't looked back since. I'm not saying I haven't had struggles. Of course I have. I'm not ready for a relationship with anyone right now either. I will wait for God's timing on that, instead of my own timing. However, I have someone to take those struggles and failures too. He has done so much for me, and he can for you too, but not as long as you are proud in your sin. The Lord loves you, man. He wants to save you, but you need to come to him and leave your sin. If you don't, you will go to hell. There's no two ways about it. You can argue against most of my posts, but you cannot argue against testimony, and that is what I have just shared with you. Wow. That was written by Love Me or Hate Me, December 21st. At TOL, at theologyonline.com. And that's why TOL exists, to strengthen one another and then to take the message of redemption, of truth, of reconciliation to the unbelieving world. And it's quite a difficult challenge. It gets hostile out there. You get people who defend child pornography. Hey, if they like the ACLU defends the legalization of child pornography. They believe child pornography should be legal. They say not legal to make it, but legal to sell it, to profit it, distribute it, publish it, to own it, to buy it, to become addicted to it. So there's a lot of wickedness out there in the world and a lot of hatred against God. And part of that fight is fought at TOL, at theologyonline.com, and right here at Bob and Yurt Live and KGOV, KGOV.com. So please give us a call sometime, 800-836-9278. Ask for our catalog or check out our website. And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school, Maranatha.